Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. It has been quite a week so far, and we've got some very big news. Of course, as everybody knows, Tucker Carlson has been removed from Fox News. Reports are still a little sketchy on why exactly that happened, but we're going to go through everything we know so far about why Tucker was let go. Also this week, President Biden officially announced that he is in fact running for president for a second term. And in his announcement video, he specifically kind of called out Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she took it about as well as you would expect. We also have more revelations about Donald Trump's involvement in the plot to steal data from voting machines in the state of Georgia. Ron DeSantis is being sued by Disney World. Republican mega donors are abandoning the party. All that and more on today's Ring of Fire. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by subscribing. Go to ROFpodcast.com, become a member, get the full show every week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So, of course, folks, we got to start with the biggest news of the week, the thing that has absolutely dominated media on both the left and the right, and that, of course, is Tucker Carlson is no longer on Fox News. The news broke on Monday of this week. Fox News put out a statement saying that they have agreed to part ways with Tucker, their highest rated host, who in the year 2022, so just last year, was averaging 3.3 million viewers. The highest rated cable news program in the country. And Fox said, see ya. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And as I mentioned in the opening of the show, like we still don't exactly know why. Like there's probably about a million different theories out there, and I'm going to try to run through as many as possible. But what is interesting is that last Friday, again, they announced this on Monday and they were like, yeah, Friday was his last show. At the end of his show on Friday, he specifically told his audience, see ya on Monday. So either he didn't know he was getting fired, or he was just toying with his audience and knew he wasn't going to be back in that building ever again. But then you also have the issue that Fox News was running promos for Tucker Carlson's nightly program on Monday morning before they made the announcement. So, I mean, yeah, you know, a lot of that stuff is pre-programmed in there. But it's also, for professionals that work at Fox News, not that difficult to pull an ad and replace it with something else. You know, you can put in a different promo, a different stinger. You don't have to keep Tucker in there just because you don't want to spend a couple minutes revamping those ad breaks. So that doesn't seem normal. You would expect them to pull those ads, not run them right up until they announce that he's never coming back. So that was super weird. And again, a lot of people immediately began speculating. Obviously, this is fallout from the Dominion voting system settlement, $787 million Fox has to pay to them. But I don't think it is because of that settlement. Now, there's a good chance that a lot of the information that came out did play a role in it. Because another thing we've heard this week is that Rupert Murdoch himself ordered the firing of Tucker Carlson. So we also know from the Dominion lawsuit that Tucker Carlson had text messages where he very mildly, by the way, disparaged management at Fox News. I mean, here they are. I'll read them. Do the executives understand how much credibility and trust we've lost with our audience? I mean, that doesn't seem that bad. Those effers are destroying our credibility. A combination of incompetent liberals and top leadership with too much pride to back down is what's happening. Again, I mean, not exactly the kind of criticism of management that you would think would warrant firing your top, not just your top rated host, the top rated host in all of cable news media. So I don't buy that it was those text messages that did him in. There's also, however, according to Bill O'Reilly, you know, former Fox News host, disgraced former Fox News host, he went on Chris Cuomo's program on News Nation for some reason this week, and he said that he, Bill O'Reilly, knows the truth, and only he knows the truth. So Bill O'Reilly is speculating that Tucker Carlson was fired because of the comments that he's made about the Capitol rioter Ray Epps. Now, if you're not familiar with that conspiracy theory, what happened was Ray Epps, a normal guy, participated in the Capitol riot, but while he was there, he was on video at one point. He actually stopped, I think actually before the riot started, and he was chit-chatting with the cops, which honestly, that does fall in line with conservatives and their whole back the blue thing. Blue lives matter. Like, yeah, so it would make sense that this dude would stop and talk to the cops. Like, that's not out of the ordinary. But conservatives took that as, well, he's talking to the cops, so clearly he's a plant, right? Like, he's one of those FBI people that we've heard so much about from conservatives that provoked the whole rally. And Tucker Carlson, according to Bill O'Reilly, was one of those people who spread that conspiracy theory. So Bill O'Reilly says that the network is afraid that they're going to get hit with a defamation lawsuit from Ray Epps, so they fired Tucker Carlson because he spread those rumors. Now, to be clear, and of course to point out how stupid Bill O'Reilly is, no lawsuit has been filed. But more importantly, even if a lawsuit had been filed by Ray Epps, and even if he does end up filing one, firing Tucker Carlson does not exempt your network from liability. In fact, because it happened while Tucker was employed at Fox News, he would probably share lawyers with Fox News if the lawsuit does happen. So Fox is still on the hook for it, even if you fire him. So that theory makes no sense. There's also the sexual harassment and hostile workplace lawsuit filed by former Fox News and Tucker Carlson producer Abby Grossberg. Grossberg alleges in her lawsuit that Tucker Carlson and his staff created a hostile work environment filled with sexual innuendos and sexual harassment. They had a photoshopped large portrait of Nancy Pelosi on the wall in a very like plunging bikini neckline thing. It's truly gross to like read all the details, but she is now suing the network over this. So that could also be something that sparked this. It could be the fact that over the years, 26 advertisers have pulled all of their advertisements from Tucker Carlson's program. And here's why that actually does matter. Even as I said, Tucker Carlson, highest rated cable news talk show host in the country. Sure. Well, typically, in normal situation on network TV or cable TV, the highest rated program is going to command the highest prices for ads. But if you have the companies that are able to pay that refusing to do it, you have to lower that ad cost to basically match a lower rated host. So even though Fox was getting all of those eyeballs, they weren't necessarily monetizing it. Now, I'm not saying that's the reason, you know, that's not a reason to fire somebody, but that does factor in, and it negates the fact that sure, he's the highest rated, but we can't monetize him, right? Like, what's the point? What does it matter if we're getting 3.5 million people a night when we're not getting paid as if we're getting 3.5 million a night, but we still have to pay him as if he's getting 3.5 million a night. So cost effective wise, Tucker Carlson probably wasn't a good investment for the network. Now, I think what is much more likely, and there's another wild conspiracy theory that I have, and I'll share that in a moment. It's not even that wild, by the way. But I think, honestly, it's probably a combination of every single one of these pieces of the puzzle. I don't think it was one particular instance. I don't think it was just the text messages. I don't think it's just the threat of another lawsuit. I don't think it's the harassment lawsuit. I think it's a combination of all of those things. I think it's a combination of not being able to properly monetize because the big name advertisers don't want to touch his program because he's so just horrific, a downright horrible human being Tucker Carlson is. So I think it's all of it. And I think, based on reports that are still coming out, I think there's more to it. And so do, you know, reporters, media insiders, Media Matters is talking about the fact that Tucker Carlson may have been part of the culture that created such a hostile workplace at Fox News. So if they're anticipating possibly more lawsuits in the future, then yeah, it's best at that point to go ahead and cut bait, get rid of the guy. Now, those are all the logical explanations, right? So let's take it a step further, right? What does the future hold for Tucker Carlson? Well, the guy's got lots of options, and he also has lots of money. The first option is he just does nothing and says, whatever, I'm rich, I'm retiring. And it's not like Tucker to do that, though. That guy likes being in the spotlight. He has been in the media business for 20 years. He's going to keep doing what he's doing. He wants to be out there. He also owns the Daily Caller. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for him to just move the Tucker Carlson program, because he's got the studio in his home in Maine. That's where he does his Fox show. He's already got everything he needs. Like, he could move to YouTube. He could start Daily Caller TV, much like Glenn Beck did with The Blaze when he was let go from Fox. Bill O'Reilly, by the way, had done the same thing. He's now back on some smaller network, even smaller than One America News. So Tucker Carlson has lots of options if he wants to continue in the media business. But what if he goes a different route, right? Here's where we're getting into those dark conspiracies right now. And by the way, other outlets have also reported on this as a possibility, because Tucker Carlson's name has been floated for many years now as a potential Republican presidential candidate. If you type in on Google, Tucker Carlson for president, or Republicans want Tucker Carlson president, any one of those phrases, you're going to find articles going back 3-4 years where Tucker Carlson's name has been floated by prominent Republicans or prominent Republican outlets, saying that he's the kind of guy that they might be able to run for president and win. Because he's exactly like Donald Trump, except to a lot of the public, this guy's an unknown. He's basically what Trump was in 2016. Even though people knew his name, they didn't necessarily know what he was about. Honestly, none of us knew what he was about because he had never been in politics before. You know, it could have been a complete surprise, or it could have been the xenophobia that we saw, and we ended up with the xenophobia. Tucker Carlson's the same way. And much like Donald Trump, Tucker Carlson also has that faux populist, you know, persona. You have plenty of people that used to be on the left, you know, your Glenn Greenwalds and your Jimmy Dores, who love to go out there and claim that, well, Tucker Carlson is anti-war. No, he's anti the United States winning conflicts. He's pro-war just for countries like Russia. I mean, he has been on Russia's side throughout the entire Ukraine invasion, to the point where the Russian state media was airing his full monologues, like at the start of the Ukraine war. They were airing it fully. In fact, after he got fired, RT tweeted out like, hey, Tucker, come work for us. Like, no, Tucker Carlson is not anti-war. He's just anti-US winning conflicts, okay? So let's be super clear about that. There's nothing anti-war about Tucker Carlson, and you're kidding yourselves and lying to your audience if that's what you're trying to sell them. But there's unfortunately millions of people who, you know, listen to that garbage and think we're getting the unfiltered truth. No, you're getting lies from a bunch of grifters. That's what you're getting. Furthermore, as I said, you know, on that populist front, Tucker Carlson loves to cosplay as a man of the people. You know, we've seen those photo shoots where he's got his flannel shirts on. He's in his woodworking shop, as if any of us actually believe Tucker Carlson's out there, you know, pulling a Ron Swanson and whittling down a log into a makeshift dagger. I don't know. He's none of those things, but he has portrayed himself as such, much like Donald Trump tried to claim, I'm a man of the people. Dude, you have a golden toilet back at your house. Like, no, you're not. But too many people ate it up. But they're not going to eat up those same lies about Donald Trump again. We all know what he's about. Tucker Carlson, on the other hand, if he were a presidential candidate, he could do the same thing Trump did in 2016. And that's a terrifying thought, because Tucker Carlson is nothing but a bigot. This is the man, let's never forget, that said that immigrants come into the United States and make this a dirtier place. He lied to his audience every single night, and it's a good thing that his voice is off the air. Now, Fox will replace him with somebody just as bad. Like, we're not going to get, you know, the Bernie Sanders show to replace Tucker Carlson. That ain't going to happen. Rachel Maddow's not going to hop from MSNBC over to Fox and bring a liberal voice. We're going to get somebody who is equally as bad, but hopefully bad enough as a presenter that it doesn't pull in the audience and that Fox News loses viewers and that maybe they open up a newspaper and start reading things for themselves. Who knows? But Tucker has a lot of options, some stupid, some dangerous, you know, like him running for president. But that's where we are. That's the story of Tucker. It continues to evolve. You know, as we learn more, obviously here on this podcast, we're going to keep you updated. I will keep you all updated on the YouTube channel as more and more comes out of this. But that's what we know so far. Tucker's out. He's gone, but probably not for long. And, you know, while we're on the subject of people running for president, we had another Democrat officially throw their hat into the ring this week, along with Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We can now add to that mix President Joe Biden. Biden had not officially announced that he was running for re-election in 2024 until Tuesday of this week. The official announcement came out. He says, I'm running for president. And, you know, it's pretty much a lock. And there's things about that that I like and that I don't like. And I'll get more into it in just a moment. But let's start with his announcement. In his announcement video, they said this. You know, around the country, MAGA extremists are lining up to take on those bedrock freedoms, cutting Social Security that you've paid for your entire life while cutting taxes for the very wealthy, dictating what healthcare decisions women can make, banning books and telling people who they can love, all while making it more difficult for you to be able to vote. Now, while this voiceover was happening, they were showing images of Republican politicians. Matt Gaetz, Ron DeSantis, and of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Even though she was not specifically mentioned, she was featured heavily in that montage during that voiceover. So Marjorie Taylor Greene gets super mad about it, goes on to Twitter, and here's what she said. She said, Republicans have zero plans to cut Social Security. That's a lie. Republicans have wanted to cut Social Security, not just this year, Marjorie, for the last 20 years, all the way back to that Bush administration when he was running for re-election. What was he running on? Privatizing Social Security. That's what he wanted to do. So it may not be the same as cutting the funding of it, but we all know what happened in the second half of the second Bush administration. And it would have cut Social Security if we had sent it over to Wall Street. There's no question about that. And then, of course, we have Paul Ryan. When he was Speaker of the House, he wanted to cut Social Security. We've had Rick Scott just this year try to cut Social Security. So don't sit there and lie, Marjorie, when your party's record of wanting to dismantle Social Security is all on the record. Like, everybody can look this up and see what happened. So, you know, you want to lie, I know that's what you do, but you also have to understand people have access to this information and you don't get to pull the wool over our eyes the same way that they could do, you know, 20 years ago. But she continued, and this is where things get truly nuts. Shame on Joe Biden for lying and selfishly deciding to run for re-election just as we are exposing how the Bidens have gotten rich by influence peddling. Joe himself has already proven he's the worst president in history, Now we have to prove how corrupt Joe Biden really is. Okay, you've had 3 years to do that ever since, you know, he first announced he was running for president the first time, and you haven't been able to do it. So I love how you're like, oh, we have to prove it now. Yeah, you've had a lot of time. There have actually been investigations. You're actually conducting a few right now. And if you had evidence, I'm sure you would blurt it out on Twitter, because you tried to do that the other day and ended up getting complaints and requests for investigations, and Hunter Biden might actually be suing you for doing that. So you've got nothing, Marjorie. You've got nothing but lies on your side. And the whole reason I want to bring that up is because I do want to talk about Biden's record. You know, he is running for re-election again, and I think we have to sit back and fully analyze this. And, you know, that involves a little bit of introspection on my part as well. She says Biden's been one of the worst presidents in history. I think we can all agree, if you're listening to this, no. Like, not even close. Biden has definitely not been one of the worst presidents in history. We have seen astronomical job growth. That is true. But we need to put an asterisk by that. Because it's not that we're just creating all these new jobs. What had happened, and this is important to remember, the good and the bad, folks, 2020, COVID hit, millions of people lost their jobs. Once everything opened back up, and we decided we were done with COVID, even though COVID's not done with us, people got jobs again. So yes, the employment rate is going to increase and the unemployment rate is going to go down, and monthly jobs reports are going to look good because those are the people going back to work that were out of work because of COVID. So I'm not really, look, no offense to Joe Biden, but I'm not going to give him credit for that. That he didn't do that. That was just the natural cycle when the pandemic calmed down. Like, that would have happened no matter who was president. On the good side, well, you know what? I'm going to talk about the bad stuff too. Just real quick, you know, the expanded drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, expanded drilling in Alaska, expanded drilling on federal lands. Horrendous, terrible, stupid decisions by President Biden. Absolutely hate that. Not a fan of it whatsoever. And I think that is his biggest mistake. The good, the infrastructure bill. You absolutely cannot deny how amazing that infrastructure bill is. Now, was it what I wanted it to be? Nope. It was about 1/6 of what I had wanted it to be. I wanted that $6 trillion infrastructure package. We got $1 trillion instead. Much, much better than nothing, obviously. And you can't say that that's not a major accomplishment, because it truly is. Just because it's not everything I wanted doesn't mean I'm going to discount how amazing it is. That is a huge feather in the cap for President Biden. The age issue. He's 80, right? I mean, hell, I've talked about his age. You know, Pap's talked about his age. We've done segments together talking about his age. Now, his age bugs me. But is it a disqualifying factor? Can you point to a single instance where Joe Biden's age has impeded his ability to be president? Sure, he's said some wacky things in press conferences or speeches. Sure, guy's not what he was 5 years ago. That's what happens with age. But in any way, has it actually impeded his ability to be president? I don't think it has. I really don't. And I've criticized his age. I've said he's too old. He shouldn't do it. But when I sit and actually have to think about it, and I ask myself that question, point to an instance where his age has made him unable to do the job, I can't do it. So that is not a factor that I can consider. Because right now, I can't point to a thing that Biden did where I would have been like, ah, if he wasn't 80, he wouldn't have done that. Nope, can't do it. And I don't think anybody else listening to this can do that either. And that's something we have to keep in mind. So he's got some accomplishments. He's had some bad appointments. I will say that Pete Buttigieg is absolutely terrible. He is absolutely horrific as transportation secretary, and he needs to be replaced. And the Democratic Party needs to move on from him, because he was given a job that he could not handle. He went from being the mayor of a city with what I think it's 100,000 people, maybe 200,000. Either way, running a city in Indiana with 200,000 people to suddenly being in charge of basically the whole supply chain in the United States, basically in charge of the airlines and airports and trains, point to anything good that has happened under Pete Buttigieg's watch. Literally nothing. That guy needs to go. Biden has to move on from him. Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States. What has she done bad? I mean, I know that her approval ratings are really, really bad. But when you think about it, you do have to ask yourself, why are they bad? Like, what is Vice President Harris out there doing that is bad? Can anybody actually point this out to me? I know she did bad things as Attorney General in California, basically let Steve Mnuchin and a lot of other criminal bankers off the hook. But as Vice President, like, has it been bad? Really, when you think about it, when you look at what she has done, and honestly, she's like mostly out of the picture anyway. Like, I think the hate that she gets is very much unjustified, like truly unjustified. So, you know, I'm not saying she's great. I'm not even saying she's good. I'm saying she is exceptionally neutral because she hasn't, in my opinion, done like horrible, bad things. And if you can think of an instance, maybe I'm forgetting one. Honestly, I mean, I do, you know, God knows how many stories every single day. So it's possible I've forgotten about something. But I encourage anybody that you know, thinks I've forgotten, reach out to us. Let me know. Let me remember that. Because right now, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that's like, oh man, Kamala Harris is the worst we've ever had. Like, it doesn't exist. And I tell you all that to end it with this. When you look at this administration objectively, and I'll admit fully, I am super harsh on them. But maybe I'm too harsh. Maybe I'm not giving them a fair shake. Maybe because they're not as progressive as I would like them to be, I have this bias against them. And that could be. And now that, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it and we're, you know, talking about it, it's difficult to point out ways that this administration has been more bad than more good. Again, the environmental stuff, they suck. Let's make no mistake about that. They're not good on the environment. But a lot of other areas, you can clean those up by replacing bad people with competent people. I think Kamala Harris is getting way more hate than she deserves. So, I don't know. I'm going Biden in 2024. Bernie Sanders already came out. He was like the first person to endorse him. Which also means, for the record, that means Bernie's probably done with presidential runs. I do not think we're going to see him run again in 2028. I think that is way too far-fetched. So this is probably the end of Bernie Sanders as being a possible presidential candidate. Now, having said that, talking about other Democratic presidential candidates, as I mentioned, there are two others right now, Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I don't know if I should even address the elephant in the room that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. obviously was one of the original hosts of Ring of Fire. He was. And obviously, he left many, many years ago. And we still, even though I do not agree with him, we still, a lot of the folks here, especially Mike Papantonio, have a very cordial, friendly relationship with him. Like, we can disagree on things and still be friends. So that's all I'm going to say about any of that. And I will also add, I completely disagree with the Democratic Party's decision to not have debates. That's not okay. We need to have those debates. It doesn't matter if these other candidates are polling low. I mean, hell, Bobby is not polling that low, by the way. And if there are other options, the public should be presented with those. If the Democratic Party is confident in their candidate, Joe Biden, then have the debates, have the public discussions. Let the voters decide if this is who they want the nominee to be. I mean, look, I'll tell you right now, if today was primary voting day in the state of Florida and those were my three options, I'm going to vote for Biden right now. But let's have the debate. Let's have those discussions. Don't just say it's all off the table because we're anointing Biden. That should not be how it works. So I disagree with the Democratic Party. You know, even if I'm already like, I'm not going to vote for those people, probably. I can't even make any decisions, you know, fully yet. But people got to have those choices. You can't just take that away from them. And again, if you're confident enough in your candidate, then you should not be scared at all of the thought of having debates. Now, I got to bring it back home a little bit, not just to Ring of Fire, but here to my state of Florida, because something big happened on Wednesday. Disney World filed a lawsuit, basically an abuse of power lawsuit, against our governor, Ron DeSantis, who, by the way, is currently watching as his poll numbers and his public support with his donors goes down in flames. Like, Ron DeSantis is crashing and burning. I did a video earlier this week where I said that he is essentially the new Jeb Bush. Like, we're probably days away from DeSantis being on video telling an audience, please clap. But this lawsuit from Disney, not only is it way overdue, like, that's what's annoying, is like, why didn't you file this a year ago when they first voted to strip you of your special district because you spoke out against the Don't Say Gay legislation? But ever since then, Ron DeSantis has been on this personal crusade, and he is back on that horse, and that's what's costing him a lot of support in the Republican Party right now. And Disney has finally realized, looking out there, I guess, wait a minute, even conservatives are against him? Now's the time to strike. So maybe it is best that they waited. They waited for the public opinion to turn against DeSantis. So they filed this lawsuit alleging illegal retaliation against the company, political interference, you know, political abuse of power, all of this stuff against Ron DeSantis. And I gotta tell you, this is going to hurt DeSantis more than anything else has ever hurt him. And here's why. Disney doesn't have to win the lawsuit. All Disney has to do is get through discovery. Because see, that's the thing, folks. When you file a lawsuit like this, both sides get to go through discovery. DeSantis will get Disney's documents, but Disney will get DeSantis's. They're going to get a lot of communications that were happening inside that governor's office. And if you think for a moment that there are not text messages and phone calls and emails and memos outlining the different ways to punish Disney for exercising their First Amendment rights, then you clearly have never been through a lawsuit or have never talked to a lawyer ever. All of that stuff would be on the record. There will be emails between DeSantis and lawmakers. There will be lawmakers texting. There will be orders from DeSantis. There will be secret meetings. There will be memos of those meetings. There will be all kinds of things that Disney will now get their hands on. And again, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all if they win the lawsuit. That doesn't matter to them. What matters is getting their hands on this information, making it public, and absolutely decimating what might be left of Ron DeSantis's career. That is the point of this lawsuit, and that is why it is so important. But then again, for DeSantis, his career may already be over. I mean, he's still got, you know, basically almost 4 full years left as our governor, so we still have to suffer under him. But, DeSantis is losing donors left and right. This week, billionaire hedge fund manager Ken Griffin, who is a major player in Republican politics in terms of donations, came out and said that he is not going to back Donald Trump's third run for the White House. And he had said he was going to back DeSantis. But now he is expressing concerns about Ron DeSantis' positions, including the recently signed 6-week abortion ban. He's turned off by DeSantis' comments about Ukraine. And now he is saying that he may pull his money out. He may not want to back DeSantis anymore. And that, by the way, is in line with the other recent billionaire who was backing DeSantis and now has backed off, Thomas Peterffy. Peterffy says, I'm not giving you another dime. Your culture war stuff has turned me off. Ken Griffin is like, look, I'm kind of done because your culture war nonsense is horrific. Then, of course, this week you had Republican billionaire mega donor Peter Thiel say, I'm not giving money to any of you a-holes because of your culture war crap. And there is nobody in this country pushing that culture war harder than Ron DeSantis. And he is now costing the Republican Party tons of money. He is costing his own potential campaign tons of money. The Republicans attacking Anheuser-Busch is going to cost them tons of money. Anheuser-Busch is a massive Republican donor. They have dug themselves into this grave. And they don't know how to get out of it. So they're just going to kind of keep, waging these culture wars, trying to fight this crap. And it's not going to end very well for them. I got to talk about this one too, folks, because there's even more news that is so bad this week. Remember when the scandal with Clarence Thomas first broke about him taking all those trips with Harlan Crowe and not reporting any of it on his financial disclosures, millions of dollars in gifts he's received, and not a single word from Clarence Thomas? He defended it at the time by saying, hey, listen, guys, Harlan Crowe's never had business in front of my court. So there's no conflict of interest. There's nothing to worry about. Well, Bloomberg reported this week that, yep, there was a conflict of interest. Yep, there was a Harlan Crowe case in front of the Supreme Court. And yep, Clarence Thomas voted to save Harlan Crowe. Now, this was one of Harlan Crowe's companies, Trammell Crowe Real Estate, I think it was. Or Properties. I forget the official name, but it was Trammell Crowe. And they were in a dispute. The conservative majority on the court a couple years ago ruled in favor of Trammell Crowe, so they won. But again, Trammell Crowe, like his name, Harlan Crowe, is literally in the company's name. And Clarence Thomas had to have known this. There is no way he didn't know this. So he issued a ruling that financially benefited the man that has been financially benefiting him. The man who owns the home where his mother lives and doesn't charge her rent. So Clarence Thomas, total liar about the whole thing. And then it got even worse this week. Because it was revealed that Republican SCOTUS Justice Neil Gorsuch sold a piece of property for a little over $1 million to the chief executive of the Greenberg Traurig law firm. And Neil Gorsuch has ruled on 12 different cases that have been brought to the Supreme Court, represented by lawyers from Greenberg Traurig. And it gets worse. Because Gorsuch had been holding onto this property, trying to sell it, for over 2 years. Nobody wanted to buy it. It was a piece of crap. 9 days. 9 days after he was confirmed to the United States Supreme Court, the chief executive of the Greenberg Traurig law firm said, you know what? I'm going to buy this piece of property. I know it's been on the market forever. I know nobody else wants it. I know it's basically useless, but I got a little over $1 million to blow. I'll buy your property, Gorsuch. Now, Gorsuch only owned 20% of the property, but still got paid a couple $100,000 from the sale. So you would think, obviously, morally, ethically, Gorsuch would have recused himself from any case brought by Greenberg. And he didn't. Out of the 12 cases he's overseen from Greenberg's lawyers, he has ruled in favor of Greenberg 8 times and only against them 4 times. But it should have been 0 times on both cases because you should have recused yourself because you have literally taken money from these people. It's about to get even worse, folks. Because last week, the United States Senate sent a letter to Supreme Court Justice, or Chief Justice, excuse me, John Roberts, and said, "Hey, John Roberts, how about you come to the Senate, voluntarily testify about all this, you know, horrible stuff happening with your court, the alleged corruption. We want to talk to you. It's your court. Please come and talk to us." Roberts, this past weekend, said no. "No, I will not come and voluntarily talk to you, Senate." So now the Senate's only choice would be, if they want to go this route, to subpoena John Roberts. And if Roberts tries to challenge the subpoena, it would then go to a Supreme Court filled with justices who not a single one of them would ethically be able to rule on it because it's their coworker. But even if they did choose to rule on it, there's literally nothing we could do, even though it's obviously a massive conflict of interest, no matter which way they rule on it. Because the point of all of this, the point of all of this corruption that I am talking about to you right now, is that there's nothing we can do. That is a horrible thing for me to say to you. It is also 100% true. We can't do anything about this. The Senate cannot do anything about this. The House cannot do anything about this. Joe Biden cannot do anything about this. Because the only way to hold these justices accountable is to impeach them. And nobody's got the numbers to do that. So what we would have to do is we would have to pass legislation, you know, putting term limits in place, something like that. We would have to pass legislation to get an official code of ethics, because one does not exist for the Supreme Court, even though it exists for every other court in this country, including the ones that have Senate-confirmed justices. So we would have to go the legislative route. But in the meantime, this corruption on the court, we can't do anything about it. We can do nothing about this. We can do nothing about John Roberts refusing to come and talk to Congress about the corruption happening in his house. But next year we can do something. We can vote out as many Republicans as possible. We can get the numbers needed to kick these corrupt bastards off of that Supreme Court. And if we can't do that, then we're stuck. We're stuck with the most corrupt Supreme Court we have ever seen. Listen, that's it for today's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show, please sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.